Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Heard Tell.
Heard Tell show, guerrilla style, because I'm at an appointment, but I really wanted to talk to our friend over in the UK, and because of the time difference, this is how it works out. We roll with it. We adapt and overcome. Another one of our great Young Voices contributors, Bill Balkett. From over in the UK. He's got a long list of publishing credits. He's also a media commentator over yonder. Bill, thank you so much for the time today, my friend. Appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me.
Okay, so we've been doing some voting over here. About a week ago, we covered the Irish elections up north, y'all. You had some local elections over there, and although these aren't covered the way like a prime minister election would or something like this, this is a really big deal, and it is a precursor for some of the stuff that's been going on over in the UK lately, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a big test for both political parties, actually. It was a test for the Conservative Party to see, you know, what effect that Boris Johnson's administration has had on public opinion over the last years since the local elections we had in 2021, which the Conservatives kind of got bounced from because of Keir Starmer's leadership, and actually the positive reception that the majority of the British public felt that the Tories had done during the coronavirus pandemic. But this was very different because at the moment, Britain's embroiled in a cost of living crisis. The Tories have also been involved in numerous scandals. There's the Partygate scandal, having illicit parties, you know, during lockdown when they weren't supposed having to. There's sleaze around second jobs. There's also another scandal called Pest Minister, which has been coming back from the ashes around bullying and sexual assault. So that in itself was a test to see whether, you know, Boris Johnson's premiership has had a negative opinion, public perception and their voting behaviour, but also as a test for Keir Starmer to see whether he's solidified the centre ground in British politics, whether he's improved since, you know, the years of Jeremy Corbyn and the disaster that was the 2019 general election. And on the whole, it was a mixed picture, but it was definitely a worse, you know, set of results for the Conservative Party, you know, who lost over 500 councillors. It was their worst result, actually, since Tony Blair was the leader of the Labour Party. And while the Labour Party also did well in, you know, improving in areas like London and the South, they weren't able to make the gains that they were hoping for in their former traditional seats in the Midlands and in the north of England, or the Red Wall, as we call it. And of course, there's a lot of scope for interpretation within Wales, Scotland, and also Northern Ireland, but I'm sure we'll get into those a little later on.
Yeah, we will. Let's start with Keir Starmer, because we're going to talk about Boris Johnson a lot here. this is kind of now he's getting elections under his leadership of the Labour Party. Just not being Jeremy Corbyn, he got a bounce from that. But now this is his party and his leadership. What is the initial reaction now that we've actually done some voting under Keir Starmer is? And it's only fair to point out the lead going into this. You mentioned it, the Partygate stuff with Boris Johnson. Keir got himself in a little bit of trouble himself. How do we parse all that out? And where does Keir Starmer and his leadership stand today as opposed to about a week ago?
That's the thing with the results, because actually there was a lot of positivity to take with Britain's biggest opposition party, where, as I say, maybe they weren't able to regain, you know, as many councils or take as many councillors from other political parties in the Midlands North, but they were able to make some kind of modest ground. And like I said, in British politics, we've got quite a strong realignment happening, where we're seeing the Tories doing better in outer suburbs, in you know, the countryside, whereas Labour do better in university towns, London areas where there are mayors as well. But that was short-lived because Keir Starmer was embroiled in his own scandal around breaking lockdown rules, as we call it in the press, beer gates, where he. During the last elections, there was alongside the contest for local mayors and also the councils, as well as Scottish and Welsh parliaments, there was also a by-election for a parliamentary seat in Hartlepool, key red wall seat. It's one that Labour held since 1970, since its formation, and then was taken by the Tories, and they were in Mary Foy's office. She's a Labour MP. They were in her constituency office in Durham, a city in the north of England. And over 15 Labour staffers, including Sir Keir Starmer's also deputy leader, Angela Rayner, had a curry and a beer when they weren't supposed to, because at the time social mixing was banned indoors. It was only for a maximum of six people or two households. And on the day in which the local election results came out early in the Friday morning, Durham Constabulary, the police force over there, announced their own criminal investigation into Keir Starmer's acts as to whether they broke down lockdown rules. And as we know from Boris Johnson's own party probe, he was fined. He was given a fixed penalty notice for doing so, as have 100 other members of the government, whether they're civil servants or ministers, we don't know. But now there's a very good chance that Sir Keir Starmer will be fined himself. And he's made a promise that that if he were to receive a fine, just like Boris Johnson did, then he will resign as Labour leader, which will actually force greater pressure on the Prime Minister to resign if he's to follow suit and have some integrity left within him.
Yeah, Bill Balcott joining us from the UK, another great Young Voices contributor and a great commentator in his own right over there. Make sure you're following him. One of the things, the speculation was that Boris Johnson has somewhat rode out the trouble he has is because there's not a clear-cut successor to him in the Conservatives, in the Tories. Is the same true with Keir Starmer? If he holds to this and he steps down, is there a clear-cut successor? Or could we be in a situation come the next general election where both parties are kind of scrambling for leadership at the same time?
That's certainly the case, I think. At least in the Tory party, there are several possible contenders to step into number 10 Downing Street. You've got the Foreign Secretary, Liz Truss, who's been, you know, centre stage in negotiating a way out of the Northern Ireland Protocol. She's also been integral to making all these post-Brexit trade deals with countries like Australia and New Zealand and other countries. Whereas with the Labour Party, there's a bit more open scope for who to take over. I mean, but the problem there is that even, you know, with American listeners, it's the same with British listeners or British people, is that there's not really any standout figures. I actually looked recently in the most recent YouGov polling into the most popular Labour figures. That's not just MPs, it could also be mayors like the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, or former prime ministers like Gordon Brown, Tony Blair. And I think it was only Yvette Cooper, who's the shadow Home Secretary, that came out as the highest current, you know, sitting member of Labour's front bench, and she was seventh. I mean, on top of my head, there's people like Wes Streeting, the shadow health secretary, who's, you know, a very eloquent speaker, you know, very moderate. Lisa Nandy is the shadow foreign secretary, and she's very tough when it comes to the Uyghur Muslims in China, and also criticising the government's levelling up strategy to make Britain more equal, more fairer, more financially prosperous. But the problem there is that ask any normal member of the public, you know, to name, I don't know, 10 members of the Labour shadow cabinet, you'd really struggle to probably list half, you know, list four or five. So there's definitely people who could take over Starmer, but they would also have, you know, an extremely difficult job in not only, you know, resonating with the British public, but also, you know, creating a vision which they see as moving on from 12 years of Tory rule, especially since the Tory party are now moving further left on economics, since they've introduced all these tax rises around national insurance and VAT. It's kind of got to raise the question, is what the Labour Party actually offering nowadays? That would certainly be the question that Sir Keir Starmer, or indeed any future Labour leader, will have to answer.
How much of this is because British politics is like anywhere else? Like you've mentioned, the Tories have been in charge for quite a while. There's got to be just a fatigue factor with some of it, just because they've been in power for so long. But like you said, you also have this dynamic of the post-Corbyn Labour Party kind of trying to figure out who they are. And then in these results, there's definitely something to be said. There's a bit of a rural and urban divide, as we would call it in the States, with some of these results. How much of this is, yeah, there's a fatigue, but the Labour Party is still going to have to come with some kind of a cohesive vision here if they're going to take the leadership?
Yeah, that's totally true. For the last at least 4 years, at least before the pandemic, the overarching issue was Brexit and Britain leaving the European Union. Had that referendum where the majority of the public said that we'd be better off being outside the trading bloc, that intergovernmental organisation, and the Labour Party under Jeremy Corbyn's reign, you know, weren't standing for it. During the 2019 general election, they actually had in their manifesto that they would have a second referendum on the Brexit deal. So Labour would essentially go to the European Union in Belgium, you know, negotiate a deal, and then have a referendum where they would campaign against it. And that hurt a lot of voters, especially in the traditional heartlands in the north, and in the Midlands, who, you know, strongly voted to leave the European Union compared to London and the south of England. So that there's that regional issue, but Brexit is becoming less prevalent. It might be interconnected to things like, you know, the cost of living, the price of food, which has been skyrocketing. You know, the Bank of England projects that inflation is going to be at 10% at the end of this year. And because of the way in which the Tories have mishandled the economy by, you know, throughout the pandemic and now post-pandemic, Labour actually leading the Tories when it comes to trust, at least public polling, when it comes to, you know, trust in handling and managing public finances. So on the economic side, you know, they do have a strength in there. And I could see come the next general election, that they could just simply ask the question to voters, you know, in any, you know, election video or during a debate, has your living standards improved under the Tories? And the vast majority of people would say no. And that in itself is a winning formula. It's just, could they incorporate that with a strong, you know, message for wider society, for, you know, promoting social liberalism, but also you know, proving that they're a more trustworthy party than the Tories, who, like I mentioned, have been embroiled in issues around trust, that, you know, sleaze and sexual assault and second jobs. It's going to be, you know, tough ask. And also the Tories have an 80-seat majority in the House of Commons, and only once in history has a majority been slashed, you know, that big. So it's going to be a mighty challenge for the Labour Party.
Yeah, talking to our friend Bill Balcott over in the UK. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into some of the policies. Every time they have an election, they do a Queen's speech that lays out the agenda. A couple interesting things in that agenda. We're going to talk about Northern Ireland, as he mentioned. Also, some comments from some ministers got some attention on this side of the pond, so we'll bring that up. Bill Balcott, more with our friend in the UK right after this on Hurt.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome back to Herd Tell. We're talking to our friend Bill Balcott over in the UK, talking about their recent local elections and the wider ranging implications there. Let's start where we left off, though. In America, we have the phrase when it comes to the elections, it's the economy, stupid. I don't know what the British version of that is, but with the cost of living at the forefront, with inflation as high as it is, now double digits in England, projected to maybe even go a little higher before it tops off. I got to imagine it's the economy, stupid, is pretty much what's on a lot of people's minds over there right now. Yes.
Yes, it is. I think at the moment, as pollsters, I think it's the second biggest issue, at least by public opinion standards. But then, like I say, there's other issues that are kind of tied into the economy. The biggest being the declining in living standards. Yeah, in the past, we've had other factors that kind of decide people's voting behavior. And during the Brexit referendum, people were more motivated by cultural factors like immigration, like the rule of law, than they were to economic factors around, you know, marginal decline or trading standards if Britain were to leave, and the fact that we might become, you know, more isolated nation. And the same was with the 2019 election. The 2019 general election was primarily seen by many people as the Brexit election, as to which party do they feel is going to deliver on the will of the British electorates. But now, with debt as high as it is caused by the pandemic, there's also been some issues around Brexit, around trade and supply issues. And also, we can't forget the war in Ukraine, which is having a massive impact on trade and also on the price of fuel, and also the rise of inflation is meaning that the price of goods are going up. So food prices and prices, you know, in supermarkets are hiking up as well. So is that infamous Bill Clinton quote goes, then yes, I think the economy is by far and away the most prevalent issue that is motivating people, at least on the doorstep.
Now, they're talking about the Tories, Bill Balkett joining us here on Hurtel. They're talking a lot of policies here, but we're just kind of looking at it from the outside. You're there, you tell me, because of the COVID policies, because of the adjustments from Brexit, because of their tax policies that you already touched on, because of the NHS policies that they've been working on, fairly or unfairly, however you want to parse it out, they're kind of painted into the corner that they're going to have to fight out of. And I don't think they've got a lot that they can really do here, do they?
They have some legroom, I feel. At least when it comes to the economy, they can, Boris Johnson, should he be, you know, the Conservative Party leader come the next election, which is most likely to be either 2023 or even 2024, then they would say, but we didn't have a war and we didn't have a pandemic, you know, in our election manifesto in that case. And as we saw with the Queen's speech, there's a lot of red meat policies which are, you know, going to be put through the Houses of Parliament over the next parliamentary year. We've got a big bill when it comes to regulating big tech. We have a very big bill, the National Anti-Borders Bill, which is supposed to hung on illegal immigration. There's a deal agreed with the Rwandan government to send asylum seekers trying to enter the UK and send them to the Central African country. And many of these red meat policies are being proposed not only because they were in the Conservative 2019 manifesto and they have to deliver on them, otherwise they're going to lose, you know, a couple, you know, many votes. But it's also being seen and interpreted, at least by some politicians, as an appeasement from Boris Johnson over distrust within his own Tory ranks over the way he's handled the economy, his behaviour during the Partygate scandal, and whether he misled Parliament in the process as well. So when it comes to that next election, when it does come around, this is the pivotal question, is that the Tories have been in power for 12 years now, and they've got to ask voters and really appeal to them, because there are going to be some who are going to be apathetic, and many people aren't turning up to doorstep as much as they were. Actually, the turnout in the local elections was just over 30%, which is an incredibly low number. It's half of what you normally see at a general election. So they really have to, the brand of Boris Johnson, along with, you know, the appeal of conservatism, modern British conservatism, has to stick, otherwise they're at risk of succeeding to the Labour Party, which to them would be an economic and a social disaster.
Because of what transpired before with Brexit, with the changing in power, with Boris Johnson's own rise to power, has it been a blessing or a curse that everybody kind of admits, like, this general election is going to be out in the future? It's going to be at least another year in the future, probably. Is that a blessing or a curse to the Tory party that's trying to readjust on the fly here?
Well, there was one report I saw from Business Insider, actually, Kat Nealon, who heard from several Tory sources that potentially the Tories are eyeing up election this year. And the reason they're doing it this year is because they feel that the economy at this moment of time is not getting any better with the NPS, as I mentioned, predicting that hike in inflation, hike in interest rates, resultingly as well, that if the state of the economy doesn't improve as they would hope, you know, come 12 months time, then what's the point of holding off for a general election? I mean, that there could be the benefit for Johnson in putting behind some of the more personal Westminster bubble stories, as we like to call them, around sleaze and Partygate, because as you're seeing with public opinion, I think in the most recent Servation poll, it showed still that a majority of the British people want Boris Johnson to resign, and that majority see him as a dishonest politician. So that in itself could be an advantage, but then that would give also Labour the chance to make more ground. We've got some really important by-elections for parliamentary seats coming up. We've got the Wakefield by-election, which was caused after Imran Khan, a Tory MP, was suspended for sexual harassment. And then we've got another in Tiverton and Honiton by Neil Parish, an MP, who was caught watching pornography in the House of Commons chamber. And that in itself will be a test. I mean, local elections, actually, as we mentioned, have more local factors involved in it. And the thing is that parties are able to concentrate all their resources into these different marginals and seats to gain the best advantage. But I think the most realistic solution as state that we can see is probably going to be 2023. Wait till this Metropolitan Police investigations Partygate is concluded. Wait until Durham Police finish their conclusion. You know, hopefully the situation in the Ukraine improves. Wait and see if any of the measures implemented by the Tory, like the energy rebate, actually has any impact on people's livelihoods, and see where to go from there.
Yeah, it makes that Keir Starmer promise even more interesting if that should go down. Bill Balcott, join us real quick before we have to let you go. A lot of the threads that went through all of these issues we talked about, the economy, the leftover wake of Brexit, things like this, border policy, those are new spins on a very old problem has risen since the Queen's speech. Northern Ireland is getting messy and it's getting loud. Just real quickly before we have to let you go, what's the results of that? How is that going to play? Because, again, an old problem, a little bit of a new spin in it with Sinn Féin taking power in the Republic of Ireland. How's that going to play going forward?
Yes, we can't forget the other parts of the UK as well. Before we get into Northern Ireland and Wales, Labour increased their share of the vote in Scotland. The Scottish National Party increased their share of the vote. So that in itself is going to raise further questions about the second independence referendum over there. But the big story I feel throughout the entire general election, as you said, is what happened in Northern Ireland, which is Sinn Féin becoming the largest party in Northern Ireland. So actually the first time that a nationalist party is the largest party in the province since Northern Ireland was created over 101 years ago. And there are far-reaching consequences with this, not only because the biggest unionist party who have been in power there for, you know, many a decade, the Democratic Unionist Party, are refusing to go into a power share agreement in Northern Ireland, because unlike other democracies in the UK, where we have a majoritarian system, where, you know, parties with the most votes would then, you know, be able to rule, or if they lack a majority, they would have to be in coalition. In Northern Ireland, the different factions, the Unionists and the Nationalist parties, actually have to work together, and they have to reach consensus. But the Democratic Unionist Party don't want to do it because they see Sinn Féin is historically, you know, the political wing of the IRA. They see that they're going to break up the union. You hear Mary Lou McDonald, the president of Sinn Féin, wanting a border poll, you know, within the next 5 years. And then we've got this issue around the protocol, which ultimately the Sinn Féin support, but the DUP don't, because it's causing trade barriers between the UK, the Great Britain, as we know, or mainland Britain and Northern Ireland. And we heard today that Liz Truss wants to scrap elements of the protocol in order to reduce bureaucracy, but also in turn respect the Good Friday Agreement, which is what has preserved peace in Northern Ireland over the last three decades. Just because they've won the majority doesn't come actually, if you combine the different votes from the other parties, then unionism is still the largest bloc, at least among voters. But it's certainly going to put pressure on Boris Johnson. It's going to put pressure on the wider union. And it's going to raise further questions as to Northern Ireland would be better off as part of the United Kingdom, or whether it would want to unite Ireland for the first time, or, in over a century.
Yeah, very interesting times. we're definitely going to have you back again to continue to cover this, because it's not going to get less interesting in UK politics. Our friend Bill Balcott over in the UK, my friend, until we get you back on Herd Tell again, let folks know where they can follow you. You have a lot of writing credits. You have a couple things that you have going. Also, your social media. Let folks know where they can follow you until we see you again, my friend.
Sure. So if you want to read any of the content that I and the team at Reaction do, a commentary news website based in the UK, then please do subscribe. It's www.reaction.life. And if you want to follow me on social media, then it's at @Bill_Balcott. And if you're an avid television or radio listener in UK, then you'll probably see me on either GB News or Talk TV. So I'll be around, but if you're interested in British politics, then it's definitely worth paying, you know, £80 for a Reaction subscription.
Yep. I watched some of your clips. You do good work, my friend, and hope to have you back soon to talk a little more UK politics. Appreciate your time today, Bill Balcott. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.